I've read Challenger Sales, I've read Predictable Revenue, but I wouldn't say it's really only in the books. I would say it also requires time in the game, as everything, even sports, even any job, really. I think you get better the more you do it, and if you do it passionately, even better.
That's David Sanchez, hybrid BDR and AE at Aircall. He was the first BDR at Aircall to reach the expert BDR position. He created 1.75 million ARR in outbound source pipeline, and he sourced 400K ARR in closed revenue. In today's episode, you will learn how to become a top performer, how to identify your ideal customer profile using your CRM reports, and how to quantify pain points during discovery calls. David, welcome to the show.
Hello, Elric.
I saw you are in hybrid BDR/AE at Aircall. What's an hybrid BDR/AE?
It's a new position, let's say, or a temporary position that we just made up. It's been a point in which my pipe or the pipe qualified that I was bringing into team was still necessary to keep feeding the rest of the AEs. And at the same time, there was a closing target to be covered, so a closing gap. And that's how we made it up. Let's say, okay, David's been working as a BDR for a long time. He still has that snowball effect. And now we can have these 3 months at the end of the year to get him too close to get ready for the AE role, right?
That's pretty good, because actually when you have you are moving to an AE role, generally it's like you are still on your AE role, and on top of it, you are having the onboarding of AEs, or you need to prepare for the transition, and then you have the transition. So, okay, that's interesting. All right. We'll see how it goes, but I imagine.
You know, we've been already like 8 weeks, almost 7 weeks at the time that we are recording this into the quarter, and it's been a frenetic experience so far. It's a challenging one, I'm not going to lie. But I believe it's also it also goes along a little bit with the future of the position, in a sense that I think AEs are prospecting even more than ever now, relying less and less on inbound. So,
perfect. So, but today let's talk more about you as your BDR role at Aircall, actually, because I wanted to talk about your performance. I was seeing on your LinkedIn profile you shared your plan to be a top performing BDR at Aircall. So, what were the key factors you focused on during your first 60 days at Aircall to adapt to Aircall, but also understand AE qualification criteria effectively?
Okay, so there are a few of them. Since we sell a cloud phone system, let's say that when it comes to product, it's quite simple. It's not something like extremely technical as it could be as when you're selling, for example, a ERP or a full CRM system like my perks and my friends at Salesforce and Hubs would do. Regarding like what I did at the beginning is I wanted to understand which were the best accounts that we could target. At what point those accounts were not signing with us. So trying to find what are the friction points with them. And then also getting very ready quite fast about the product. So how I did that was, first of all, internal reports in Salesforce. So thanks God that our Salesforce admins are super good and they have everything segmented. And I could check industry and even sub verticals or sub industries wise what we were closing. Then I went into the biggest lost stops and like the most common lost reasons for our ops. So I could understand, okay, this is something that causes friction when companies are evaluating. And then this is something that as a BDR, you should be able to tackle in a first call to avoid, make your AE lose time on these kind of opportunities or deals. And then lastly, I think I jumped on, out of the 100 first demos that I ever booked, I think I jumped on 90-95% of them. I wouldn't miss any of them. If I was in demo, even if I was just listening, I was also doing my email cadences or LinkedIn messages, but I was there listening to the customer and how my AEs expressed and they convey the value proposition of our product. So those are, I think, the three pillars that I worked on.
You mentioned the reports on Salesforce. So what were you looking for inside those reports? Because you were talking about the ICP and you had good data. What did you find on those reports that you could use in your outreach?
Nice data points that you could filter, or that actually Salesforce and I believe HubSpot as well. I've never used HubSpot before, but Salesforce actually is very useful for, is that you can actually narrow down to keywords in certain, let's say, descriptions or fields of certain opportunity or account. So I was mainly looking at the beginning, you know, very broadly. At the beginning, I was looking at which countries are converting better than others. Since, you know, at the moment I cover Iberia and LATAM. So I was trying to look like, okay, which countries are converting better? Then which industries are converting better? And then trying to find common keywords on those different opportunities that we close. But even like a fourth point that I would think of is I was doing all this in install-based customers. So customers that are signed with us and that, you know, they're working with our technology. And I was also looking at the expansions of those accounts. So not only looking at who signed, but if they signed and they grew, why did this happen? Because that means they were fitting perfectly our ICP at some point. So that was also something that I looked into.
And what commonalities did you find, for example? Did you find like a country that was better than another? Because I imagine Iberia for Spain and LATAM specifically is going to be really a big market. So did you find like a country that was working, that was closing higher than other countries? Or?
Yeah, my head of sales is going to kill me for saying this probably, but I must say that Spain obviously is like the jewel of the crown in a sense that is the main focus of the market. Overall, it still has the biggest amount of closed MRR in our market. But it's not the best converting country that we have. Indeed, it's actually Chile. As of last year's results, actually Chile was the highest converting, not much higher than Spain, but extremely well when it comes to dollar conversion from qualified pipe to closing. That made me really focus on Chile for a bit of time, not gonna lie. And then we found that, for example, Mexico was the least converting one, which is then one that I also tried to avoid for a little while. And then also the good thing is about going to the demos is that you also gather feedback from AEs. Like you go to the demo and you can actually discuss with them afterwards. And, you know, we sell telephony. So in a sense, we also depend on the internet quality of our customers. So we expect that they have good phones, good internet speeds for the voice IP calls to follow through. And then you find out which countries or which areas, even in a certain country, have better connection. That also gives you hints like on which accounts you want to be tackling and which accounts you're going to be finding on Sales Navigator or like whichever other software you use to prospect.
And why do you think Chile was having the highest win rate on your market?
This is going to sound controversial. As a European, I've always felt that Chileans, they negotiate very similar the way as Europeans do, especially Spanish people. Like they have very similar ways when it comes to making decisions, to making approvals on budgeting and negotiation. And that's something that I think really, really made it that Chile and Spain matched the conversion results very closely and very, very apart from the rest of countries, actually.
The opposite question, why Mexico is the one with the lowest win rate, do you think?
I'm not going to throw the ball on them. I'm never going to throw the ball on them. I would say potentially we didn't know how to adapt as much as to the buying process that maybe Mexican companies have to the selling process that we have.
Yeah.
But it's also data across over, you know, it's 3,000 opportunities, 4,000 opportunities. I don't know at the time, even more probably. I can't recall the number exactly. But when the volume is so high and you find this trend, I'm not going to make a guess, but either it could be, you know, that it could be like pricing objections. It could be the way that we negotiate with them. So I wouldn't really be able to give you a certain reason, but the data was there.
But that's fine. I was curious to understand because I know LATAM, a lot of people think when they go to LATAM, they are really similar markets because they speak Spanish. For their Spanish-speaking countries, but they are not. So, and one thing to go back also on, you are talking about the keywords that you can use on Salesforce, for example, inside the report. So what type of keywords were you looking for during this research?
So I was trying to find keywords regarding integrations, so different technologies that we integrate with. I was trying to find keywords on different teams that we are best suited for. So it's no secret that for example, in a SaaS company, SDRs and BDRs are the ones making the most calls.
Yep.
AEs also should be making calls and potentially CSMs, but the majority of the volume is definitely going to come from SDRs and BDRs. So once I was filtering down, trying to understand which companies were working under this model, you know, you could also identify along those keywords, you could also start identifying their own trends with those keywords, such as like, once you look for SDR keyword in the CRM, you would see, okay, it's very easy to find SaaS, fintech, let's say software logistics kind of companies. And that's where I then put my focus for the next 90 days, potentially. So yeah, those were mainly the kind of keywords that I was looking for, integrations and job titles / teams presence in the company.
And this info was under the opportunity level, or it was more like on the contact, not contact, but the account level, or it was like info that someone was filling out on the opportunity?
No. It was actually like all of them were qualified opportunities. So pretty much like, it either was information from an SDR or an AE. And if it was qualified, it had to be quite accurate. Like the information standards that we have internally here, like they make you fill a lot of spaces, you know, and fields.
Ah, okay. Now I understand. Okay. Now I understand why you are doing this research here specifically, because yeah, I've been part of companies where we were using Salesforce, but you could do this research, but you won't find a lot of information. So, okay. Now the other thing also I've seen that you were doing also was you were talking to the top performing BDR at Aircall when you joined. So, what did you learn from them when you joined?
I remember very clearly when I first joined. It was actually a very funny day, because I joined in a session that was called BDR kickoff. So literally my first day was the BDR annual kickoff of the company, and I was joining as a BDR. I knew nobody, but I went to the different sessions that they had already in place for the BDR kickoff. Then I had Victor Hansen, who used to be a BDR, a senior BDR for us in the Nordics market, who was explaining, he did a 30-minute speech on account management and territory management, let's say. So yeah, how he was organizing the different accounts, how he was preparing them along different months, specifically those enterprise accounts. At that time, like I thought to myself, like, I'm never going to be able to tackle these kind of accounts. But the explanation was so clear that then I remember like 2 months later, I asked him for the presentation back, because at that time, like, it didn't make sense for me to review. But 60, 90 days later, after being onboarded, I went to him and I was, Victor, send me back the presentation, because I remember it was a good point. And then there was this other guy that I've always been a mess when it comes to my CRM, like cleaning process. I've always been kind of a little bit of a mess. But there was this guy called Simon in our theme team, Simon Dink. And he had this methodology for setting up tasks in Salesforce, such as that you would have every single morning, you would have the 40, 50 tasks that you had to cover among email cadences, LinkedIn and calls. And in each of those tasks, with only like 4 words, he would know like the whole background of the company. So it's like the country, the headquarters country, the integration, the team, and the key decision maker. So like, and you know, he could see one liner, all the information that a BDR would need to see in order to attack or call this company. So it was mainly CRM management, I would say, in the first lessons that I had when I joined from our top performers. But then, yeah, like we also jumped into a few calls together and did some shadowing. Bit difficult at the beginning because I don't speak French, but that they were very friendly and translating everything on this side. And then, you know, it was easier to kind of shadow UK calls and Nordics calls, which are normally in English.
For context, we didn't mention at the beginning, but Aircall is a French company, and David is working at the Paris headquarters of Aircall.
Yeah.
Interesting about what you learned from them specifically. So let's talk about the first presentation. You were talking about the territory account management. So what did you learn from this presentation? Because you said at the beginning, you joined, it was not super helpful, but then at 90 days, you started, you came back to the BDR and you asked him about getting more information, getting the presentation. What did you learn from this presentation?
Not directly in that presentation, but 90 days after. I think it happens in many companies, and you know, this is a very widespread mistake that we sometimes make on BDRs, is that we allow BDRs to take as many accounts as they want. And like, you know, at some point they start taking 10 accounts because they are very motivated per day on the first few months, and they end up with something close to 500, 600 accounts, and they're working. The reality is I found that every time that I went over 400 accounts, I was getting lost. Like, I was forgetting accounts. I was not replying either emails, or I was not making enough the calls that I had to make to the right people. So when that happened, and that happened at some point, I was like, hold on a minute, like, let's go back to Victor. So one of the points in his presentation that he was making is, first of all, guys, like, we need to make sure that we never go above a certain threshold of accounts, that we start forgetting that we're working them, or that we start kind of like losing our North Star. You know, it's very, you know, slang, business slang. But so something that he taught me was like, let's do packs of like accounts. So like, let's do kind of cluster them, which is something that we even developed a little bit farther when I was an expert BDR. So at some point we were clustering them in different buckets of employee size, and then countries, and then on a third dimension, it was integration and industry. So it was very easy for me to think of 200 working accounts. And when somebody came to me and said, okay, what you working on, SMB, Chile, FinTech, I knew the three accounts in that cluster and I knew them by heart. So that clustering system that we invented and we came up with, that was like very, very key, so that you wouldn't lose sight of the accounts, which then also helps you in a sense to every time that you're checking different news portals and you see a new from an account that you've probably been working on or you're probably working at the moment, it's very easy to say, okay, this company fits into my Mexican logistics mid-market cluster, and that's where I'm, you know, going to put them. And I know I got to attack them again, because whatsoever, like, new funding round or new CEO.
We're going to move forward, ask you more questions about this specifically, but you mentioned expert BDR. What's an expert BDR? Because I saw you are the first one, actually.
Oh God, you got to bring over my VP for this. So initially, the thing at Aircall and many other companies, I believe that you do BDR if you cover certain KPIs and you cover certain seniority, like you move into senior BDR. And then at some point, we have this position internally that is called expert BDR. So what that means for us is it adds a little bit of more restraints into the accounts that you work on. So for example, I was only allowed to work mid-market and enterprise once I moved into enterprise BDR. And that's actually something that it's monitored. So kind of, I couldn't go lower than a certain threshold of employees. And then it also put you in a position in which you have to give feedback about different processes that we have internally. So feedback on like how much time is lost on prospection, feedback on how much time we lose in cadences, feedback on, you know, how many activities should we be doing to get a meeting. So it's more connection with BDR management and also our BDR director, which is always good to kind of be sharing these strategic docs with them. But at the same time, like, the pressure was there. Like, you had to do your numbers basically relying on big accounts, which is not always easy to get and very unpredictable, or could be unpredictable, I mean, for the first few weeks.
Okay, interesting. Because, yeah, when I saw it, I was super curious to know that. So what I like on this one specifically is because you are still on the run, and so you can see when you are talking about the data, for example, for the team, you can see because the problem I am seeing a lot generally from leadership is they see the data, but they don't understand why, for example, there is something happening. So why this conversion rate is lower than the previous week, for example. And here specifically, you will be the one saying, okay, I think this conversion rate is going down right now because of this, because we have an issue with, I don't know, each tool. And that's why we are having this issue.
Yeah, it was a little bit like that in a sense. And also, you know, senior BDR is always here in the Oracle house. They always take care of the, like a little bit of part of the onboardings for new hires and so on, when you are expert, that goes to the next level. Like you literally are very much on all onboardings of new BDRs.
Just to go back on, because we are talking about the account, the different cluster you are going after. So something I was curious to learn more about is how do you use alerts and buying triggers on those accounts specifically? Because I remember that's something you mentioned to me on the first call we had together.
Yeah.
But, and you started to talk about that earlier. So we're saying on the, I don't know, news website, you see a name of a company. So how do you use alerts and buying triggers?
First is like building, let's say, a knowledge base in which you know you can find those. That is something that I believe every BDR manager should work on, to having these kind of sources of truth of their own market and where they can monitor what's going on slightly in the market, at least in startup level. That would be very, very applicable for any SaaS company, to be honest. So once you have that, we started to create something that is like different approaches for different triggers. So the approach that we followed for companies with new funding from, let's say, venture capital funds was totally different to companies that were expanding geographically, especially across LATAM. It happens a lot, cross-country expansion. So once we had that, and once I was, you know, that was organized, like you could really start using those triggers. Now, which are those buying triggers that we could leverage on? And I believe many other softwares could be leveraging is, on my perspective, is either employee growth, expansion geographically, expansion vertically. So if you get an announce from a company that is purely SMB and they now say that they are expanding or a new product for enterprise because they want to tackle the enterprise level, that means that they're going to have someone selling enterprise. Like for sure, you don't go enterprise if you don't have someone or someone prospecting enterprise. Other triggers that I was finding was were C-level changes or moves in C-level. Pretty much that's it, I would say. Those were the buying signals that I was mainly finding. Not really buying signals, but let's say move signals, such as that something's happening in the company, you know?
How do you keep track of that? So far, which website or tools are you using to keep track of that?
Oh, we're going to get a specific here now then. So for Spain and LATAM, different portals, such as like DealFlow for Spanish market, Descubre BC, that's for LATAM, and LATAM List, good one for LATAM as well. How do I keep track of that? Definitely log it into the CRM. So I log it always in the same way. I log it always as the same kind of activity. So it's very easy for me to have a report, which is funding alert, colon, and whatever comes after. You know, it is like, for example, Payflow just raised 45 million. And then you would have that task into the CRM. And then I would go into my funding alerts report, so to keep track of them. That's the way I would keep track of them. And then also, like, it's a good one, but for job changes, it's like this kind of report that you can run into Sales Navigator, which is, it's a little bit sketchy and quite manual to do at the beginning, but you can go into lead search, literally pick up the top 25 accounts that you have installed based in your own market. And this is for previous people that used your solution previously. You plug those companies into past company, and then you plug them into current company, but you cancel them out. So you exclude them from the search, let's say. Once you have that for the top 25, you can iterate for the top 50, top 100, top 200 biggest accounts, and it will give you back all the lead results that people that used to work in those 25 companies, but no longer work in those 25 companies. And that is magic. Like I did that for our market, Iberia and LATAM. I think the top 25 just gave me 600 results of new people that we were not talking to, and they had changed companies. But then we did that for our US BDRs, and that was massive. Like out of the top 25, that was like 6,000 contacts or 5,000 contacts, which was, you know, you could feed a BDR for a whole year just with that.
And I love this specific playbook actually for prospecting, because I know when we're preparing the episode together, we are talking about all bound, I would say, if we talk about being an SDR or BDR. But specifically here, you are really prioritizing those leads who already know you, that already buy your product or maybe using in the past, instead of having just a list of accounts and you have 2,000 accounts and you go to those 2,000 accounts and you call them without having like any prioritization. And here specifically, you're focusing on those accounts who already have someone inside that already know the product. So it's a lot easier. For one, in prospecting, it's easier because obviously if you talk to someone who already use a product, well, the conversation will be easier than talking to someone where they're already completely cold with what you do. So, and yeah, that's, I love Sales Navigator actually for to do that.
So. Yeah, it's an amazing tool. I'm not going to lie. Like it's just, if they keep improving it, I've seen that they are now releasing like AI into it slowly, like in a better phase. But if they keep iterating it, I think it's going to be a massive product. It's already is, but it keeps getting. So yeah, agree on that with you. You know, and I don't know about like your take, if I can ask you, but, or have, how you have organized before, but I see some companies that they literally build out the list for their BDRs instead of letting them find them or like actually proactively include that in their mindset. Like, hey, you got to feed yourself somehow. What's your take on that? Like, would you rather have BDRs looking for it? Would you have like a hybrid in which you provide them some, they find some?
I think it depends a lot on different aspects, but if your team is already have some experience with outreach or your product specifically, I would let the team do it because I'm more confident on having them making the right decision on the accounts they are going after. Versus if I'm just, for example, have junior reps on the team, they don't know the product. Here I'm going to be, it's not being strict, but it's here are the, I don't know, 500 accounts you can work this year, for example. You can maybe work 200 at the same time, 150 at the same time. And why we are making those decisions on those accounts is because we already identified the size of the companies, the industry, that they have the right titles inside the account or the right tech stack, for example. So it depends a lot with, I would say, the experience I have on the team. And I'm not saying it's the right thing to do, but obviously if I think the SDR function with sometimes in the past I gave too much flexibility and you are ending with not focusing on the right accounts. So I think that's why I'm making it this way. For example, at Chili Piper on the enterprise team, basically with the leadership team, we had like a list of 300 accounts and that was the list we should go after. SDR could work accounts as of this list, but they were getting paid less than focusing on the 300 accounts, for example.
Fair. I mean, I've seen both models and I agree with you. Depends on the profile of your reps mainly and the product somehow. Also, like if you're a very specific niche product just for enterprise companies, that's definitely going to, you know, put your numbers down in terms of objective accounts that you can have. So you got to get a little bit more granular when you select them.
And also the size of the account, because your TAM for those who are listening, not familiar with TAM, is total addressable market. If you are focusing out on enterprise account or large enterprise accounts, if your list is Fortune 500 companies, well, you only have 500 accounts and that's it. So your approach will be completely different than if you are going after, for example, at Chili Pepper, we are going only after SaaS businesses and the total addressable market was 15,000 companies who are fitting the criteria we are going after. So 15,000 accounts, it's, well, we are going to approach it differently than
Absolutely.
500 accounts.
Yeah.
Something else I wanted to talk with you is around discovery, because actually on your post, when you're talking about being a top performer at Aircall, but also that's something you mentioned with me is, on your discovery calls, you are really doing discovery calls like an account executive. So we'd love to understand your process.
I try though. So you want to know how I do them or how I thought about doing this?
Yeah, let's start with thinking about this and then how you do it.
I think it came naturally somehow because of me going to so many demos. So me attending many demos with my AEs, you know, you end up finding out which are the real points that they are actually qualifying in those demos. sometimes they overlook completely like some of the points in the discovery notes that you gave them. And I was like, okay, if they are never talking about this in the demo, maybe I can, you know, just overlook these points the same way they do and use that time in the discovery to focus on other stuff that they are actually doing in the demo. It might seem counterintuitive because you would have someone providing the AE already the information that they need at the demo. And maybe it's like a little bit of info duplicities, but in a sense, AEs also felt identified in the notes that I was providing them. So that made it look way easier to qualify certain pipe, unless we found an extreme red flag in the demo. So the way that I start thinking about it, I would say is that I started focusing less and less on like information that is almost available to you publicly. Such as like, you know, I could really ask a company how many employees you are. And then they tell me 341, very specific. I don't really need that. Like I can go on Sales Navigator. I've got 1,000 portals in which it's going to tell me between 320, 350. And I don't really need much more information from there. So I know some BDRs go this granular and like, I truly believe that this is a time loss and a value loss in our discoveries. So what I did in exchange, no, indeed.
So many times I'm seeing that, asking those questions, for example, or even though on LinkedIn, and it's not on the discovery call, saying, hey, do you have, for example, because I have example of companies who are competitors with deals, that deals or Oyster, companies like that, who are sending me a message, say, hey, do you have international employees?
But you could have looked that, no? You could have looked that.
Exactly. So that's, but and here, that's, I know that's something that can they can ask you on the discovery call. And did you do your research before doing this call? Or?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's for sure for many, many data points that you can get on discovery today, like the internet and the different plugins and the different extensions that we have into this, Google Chrome, like make it easier and easier. So I think the main focus that I was putting into those discoveries was trying to find a compelling event, or at least trying to create it. It's not always that easy. It might be like a hidden compelling event. We always say what, when, and what happens if not. So, you know, what do you need to achieve? When do you need to achieve it for? And what would happen if this doesn't happen? That would be the perfect compelling event if we can get to that point of, you know, when you have a compelling event, it's extremely easy to get the pain points. So like once you know, okay, I would take example Aircall because by this time we're going to need to fit the new regulation law for support customers, for customer support. And if we don't do that, we might be, you know, facing like a big, you know, ticket from the government, whatever, like we're going to get a fine from the government. Okay. And then you would get into the pain points very easy. So what is stopping you from getting there? How long has this been going on? At which levels this is affecting? Like once you get those three, I think you don't even need timeline. Like that's already into the compelling event. I already know they need this solved by next March when the law is being like pushed over. So, I mean, it's a simple example, the one I gave. Obviously, it's based on a law, but that can also be for many business reasons, such as like, okay, I'm talking to a VP of sales, second quarter that they don't hit the number. What happens if next quarter you don't hit the number? You know, so it goes along many ways.
And then you have the same with VC-backed funded companies also. When they are raising the next round, for example, you can reuse that as a compelling event.
Of course, yeah.
You said you are doing that naturally, but do you think you learned this at your time at Salesforce or Aircall, or what? Or did you read a book that helped you?
I've read a few. I've read Challenger Sales. I've read Predictable Revenue. I've read a few others like on social selling. But I wouldn't say it's really only in the books. I would say it also requires time in the game, as everything, I believe, like, you know, even sports, even any job, really. I think you get better the more you do it, and if you do it passionately, even better. Something that I did even as a BDR is like I do my forensic reports. Like I try to understand why my ops didn't get qualified, and I analyze that. I think AEs do it more often on the deals that they lose, And it's something that we maybe oversee for BDRs, but actually making BDRs kind of like a forensic report of why your account is not getting qualified or why this account didn't want to go to demo, like what went wrong. That really made me realize what I was missing at the beginning, or you know, something that I was not doing right, in which I was pointing them in the wrong direction. When I say naturally, it's a tricky one, because I would say, yeah, I learned a lot in Salesforce. Like if I don't say that, they're going to kill me. No, jokes. But like I learned a lot with them. It's really like a mini MBA kind of experience that you do there. And I'm telling myself that I didn't even finish it. I didn't even go into the BDR level in Salesforce. But then definitely here at Aircall, like I've got amazing examples here that have taught me through in both in the Iberia market and outside of it, senior members of the teams. And definitely, you know, you get to that having many conversations. I didn't know how to qualify a compelling event for a phone cloud system just when I joined Aircall, definitely. No.
Something else also you mentioned is you are really good at quantifying the pain also of your prospect. How do you do that during discovery?
That's a good one. And I was asking this myself for a long time, and I still kind of like struggle when explaining it. So first, I would think this starts by understanding what are the business pains that your product is assessing or impacting. So I think many BDRs or many BDR orgs don't have this settled down from the beginning, but I believe there is three levels of pains, and that's in many, many books that we've seen out there. I would say technical pains, business pains, and then at the bottom and the deepest ones would be personal pains. Extremely difficult to get to them, but I mean, average BDRs get it to technical level pains. Top BDRs get to business level, like 0.01 get to personal levels. You really need to understand that second layer of pains, which is the business pains. For that, I would recommend everyone, and the way that I train myself to do this is I think it's very basic to give BDRs, and this is something they do very well at Salesforce, is they give you training on basic financial concepts, such as like, you know, profit loss, statements, balance sheet of a company, so that you get at least a little bit of a basic in financial understanding. Because, you know, if you're a BDR and you are selling a product that impacts revenue, but you don't know what operating profit is, how do you know, you know, how do they get from revenue to operating profit, which is literally what the BC fund is looking for. Once you get to a little bit of that understanding, which is already good, I think the main stuff is to, you know, you already understand where your product is impacting or which lines is impacting. Try to find a way to quantify those. So if I know my product is a product that is saving, let's say, money on salary, on salary expenses, or, you know, employee productivity per hour, what I'm going to attack is like, okay, the different questions that allow me to quantify it. How many employees do you have? How many hours they work on average per week? How many hours, for example, do you suspect that they lose doing this manually or wherever? And then from there, you know, you get to an average salary of the employee, and you can, you know, in a very broad term, you can quantify the pain of, you know, losing that time manually. That is good, but if you translate that into revenues and operating profit, that is magnificent, because that's what the head of sales is going to present to the CFO. And I believe CFOs are everywhere now. I think they're even checking like what are the snacks in the kitchen at the moment. So yeah, I would say that those are the basics to get started into quantifying pain.
At what moment do you do that? Do you do that on a cold call, or do you do that like you have like a 30-minute call with your prospect before the handoff with the AE, or when do you do that?
Yeah, normally I don't like doing discovery in a cold call. Like I try to keep cold call extremely, you know, extremely short, such as something like in between 3 to 6 minutes at most. And I already feel bad if I'm taking 6 minutes out in a cold call. Because if in 6 minutes I've not been able to convey the value proposition and take you to the next meeting, I'm doing something wrong, definitely. Or, you know, being just a pain in the ass in your morning. No, I actually do it in a discovery call, face-to-face. I would say 99% of my discos are on Zoom. So it's literally face-to-face, in which I present myself as a pre-sales consultant. And I tell them, look, like, my idea today is to lay down all the different, you know, variables that we have to move forward with this project. And let's try to make as much sense as we can together if this would be profitable for your business or not. So they already know I'm going to try to do something with numbers, like with the upfront contract. So I'm going to try to play some number games, and they're already aware. It's not always that straightforward, to be honest, because if I talk to, sometimes I might be talking to head of sales or sales directors that don't even have the numbers straight on, or they don't even have like an accurate, they might not really know what is the conversion for inbound leads, which is totally fine. I mean, like, you don't really need to know those numbers by heart. But then you talk to, for example, you're lucky and you get a CRO in the first call, they know everything. Like, they know absolutely everything. So that's what I would say I do. Yeah. And also, like, it comes down to, you know, for the, let's say, top five, top six pains, business pains that your tool is solving, have like a little bit of a quantifying template. So, you know, something that we tackle, for example, at Oracle, pretty quick sample is like, we tackle the lack of productivity on SDR teams. So it's just like they need to call faster and they need to call higher volume of leads or contacts. And that's something that many companies struggle with. Okay. And they just need to go faster. Okay. So we do that because we have, you know, this kind of progressive dialer, whatever you want to call it. So one pain point that I know for sure that I can quantify is like when a head of sales comes to me and says, SDRs are not, for example, calling to 20% of my leads. Okay. And then from there you stop and you tell them, okay, what would happen if they were able to call them? Because at the moment they don't have that much hours in the days to tackle that 20%. So if I can get my BDRs to call that extra 20% of leads and they convert at the same rate that they are converting as of right now, what would be the revenue impact on the company right now? And that's literally like three questions. Not always as straightforward, but that's one of the easiest cases that we could have internally to quantify.
Nice. Yeah, I really see that. You still need like business acumen to do this, because you really show that you understand the impact of not just on having Aircore, it's what's the impact on the revenue, for example, not just, hey, we can improve your productivity. No, yeah. Yes, we can do that, but what's the impact on that on your revenue?
I think it's business acumen is one of the skills that many companies are not inducing into their BDRs. And I'm actually feeling quite sad about that one, because in a sense, like, you're putting out BDRs, sometimes, you know, junior people outside of just right out of university, and you don't even give them a little bit of hints on how to talk to like a logistics head of sales, which is completely different to a, you know, SaaS head of sales, the way they talk, how they express. And I think that's something that every single company should try to invest in.
To talk about business acumen, at my previous role, I was struggling with that specifically because I was learning a new buyer persona. I was VP of data, chief data officers, for example. And they are really technical buyer personas. That's the first thing. Second thing, and that was the first time I was dealing with technical buyer personas. So that's the main, I would say, challenge I had. The second challenge I had was we could sell to any industry in the world. So earlier you were talking about checking Salesforce to see what's obviously the best industry you can go after. So obviously I did that because I don't want to understand the VP of data on each industry in the world because it's too many things to run. So I learned about VP of data in SaaS, VP of data in retail, and VP of data with FinTech, for example. And it was hard, I would say, trying to understand, because the three of them were thinking about data differently.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I agree on that.
Last question. So what advice would you give to sales reps of SDRs, BDRs who are aspiring to be top performers in their organizations?
Okay, I'm going to try to give three. First one is to stay curious. Like, stay curious, mate. Like, go into the CRM, talk to people in the company, talk to CSMs, talk to partnerships. Like, get to know what are the main conversations that they're having with the customers. If even if that's possible, like, jump on a few calls with your CSMs so you understand a little bit on the perspective of the current customer. So, you know, CSM partnerships, extended team, go talk to them, go talk to product. Just stay curious, you know, and read the news on the market that you're trying to tackle. Next one is understand your business. I think sometimes we talk too much about SaaS BDRs, which is a little bit of a straightforward business to understand. It goes along with, you know, licenses or consumables. But try to understand it in a sense that you even come down to understanding what harms the business, you know, what kind of deals could harm the business financially. So definitely try to understand the business from A to Z. I mean, you're not going to know it every time, you know, as a BP or something like that, but try your best to do that and find time. You know, it's only 10 to 15 minutes a day. And then the last one is, if you want to go, if you want to go and get the biggest ops ever, and you want to be, you know, that person in your company that is bringing the biggest qualified opportunities, you know, that could potentially close, learn ways to get to power quickly. Like, learn ways on how to leverage middle management, bottom-up approaches to get them to understand what would be the next step and why they would need to involve the next VP or C-level into the conversation. You don't need to make it super harmful. Like, you don't need to say, hey, we're not going to have the demo without your VP. But something more like in the lines of, I like to say something that is like, hey, so Elric, normally when we come to this point and we have found, you know, 2 to 3 pains that we, you know, challenges that we could solve for you and you have it at the moment, we would normally like to have a VP of sales in the next call just to get a perspective on how this would align on the mid long-term strategy of the company, you know, because we are now, you know, looking into very current pain points that you guys are having, but perhaps this person, once they see the tool, they could give us, you know, a perspective on if this looks nice for you guys in the long term. So it's kind of a little bit softer, you know, make me meet them because this is something that we could potentially partner on for a few years.
David, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
One last question. So do you have anything else you want to share with the audience?
Drop by my LinkedIn, doing a little bit of promo here. I try to share some tips every now and then when I have the time. But happy to be here with you as well, Elric. Been looking at the different episodes, and I think you're bringing a lot of plenty of value for the community and having some superstars in here as well. So happy to be part of it now.
Thanks, David. And for everyone listening, I see you on the next episode. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So for Spotify, to leave a review, what you can do is you can use your phone, then go on the Spotify app, then you go to the SDR Game page, and then at the top of the page, you can leave a review. It's a 5-star review if you enjoyed the episode, obviously. And then if you are listening to this episode on Apple Podcasts, feel free also to leave a review on your app. Thanks for listening, and I see you on the next episode.